Live from Circa Las Vegas, it's Cofield and Company.
Ultimate Contest Weekend is going down here at Circa Las Vegas. We're part of a big radio row with about 25 different stations. A little quieter now. A lot of the morning shows, Eastern and Central time zones. But tonight, if you're part of the contest, either one of them, Circa Million or Circa Survivor, they've got a meet and greet that starts up in about 90 minutes over at Bar Canada. Outstanding spot. Tomorrow, open bar at Stadium Swim, 10 to 4. That's a good one. There is a blackjack tournament. Again, these are all things that are open. Come on down, ask your questions. If you're in these contests, you can benefit. There'll be a Legacy Club mixer tomorrow night, 8 o'clock until 10, and then the Circa Football Preview free seminar right here where we are in the Galaxy Ballroom on Floor 3. That'll be hosted by Mike Palm, and Circa Invitational champ Chuck Edel will be part of that. Also, Sam Monson is in there, and Mike Pritchard, Pritch, who, of course, was a longtime member of the staff at ESPN Las Vegas, Rancho guy, and also a national champion with Colorado, and a dude who played with the Falcons and the Seahawks in the National Football League. So really cool free seminar, and that's for anyone. You don't have to be in the contest. For anyone, betting seminar, Mike Palm will host that. That is on Saturday at 2 o'clock in the Galaxy Ballroom. So in just a little bit, we're going to be kicking off the first edition of the Dan Mullen Radio Show. That's going to go down across town. We're down here in downtown Las Vegas. It'll be on the west side. The home of the Mullen Show is Parkway Tavern at 215 and Flamingo. They'll have $2 beers during the show. It's a new time. No longer a 6 o'clock start. 7 o'clock start on the Dan Mullen Radio Show every week. That'll go 7 until 8, and you can take advantage of some of the happy hour specials up. Grab some of the appetizers. The loaded tots, the mini corn dogs, the giant pretzel, Griffin, giant pretzel. I'm all over it. And then they just did add in the last 6 months, Naked City Pizza. You know how good that place is, and I highly recommend. Griffin, did you grab a slice when we were hanging out there, or the back home pie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I always got to taste the food every time we go to Naked.
Red sauce, the mozzarella, what's it all? Roasted garlic, pepperoni, Italian sausage. Who was I sitting with who was raving about the sausage? The back home pie you can get Naked City over at the home of the Dan Mullen Radio Show on the west side, 215 and Flamingo. That'll start up at 7 o'clock. I had a chance to talk to Jet Thomas, the running back. I'm not even sure if he's a starting running back. We don't have a depth chart yet. They're still working on the depth chart, but Jet is regarded as one of the best running backs in the Mountain West Conference. He is back for year number 3. You'll hear this in the interview. He is still only 20 years old, so he's still a growing tyke, and I talked to him about just what he's put on in terms of weight. He's not a gigantic guy, but he's weighing in now at 190, and I asked him how he's feeling now in terms of running at 190 pounds.
I feel good. I feel straight. Like, my body still feel the same as it was when I was like 180.
Does that mean you run different?
Y'all see a lot of breaking of tackles, and, you know, just me running hard as usual.
Tell me what you've learned from the other running backs, you know, especially Lee, the older guys are coming in, and Glover, in terms of what they've been through and what they've, you know, in terms of knowledge they've imparted on you.
You know, because I'm still young, I'm, you know, just 220, and them guys are older, so they give me a better knowledge of the game. You know, Key is patience, you know, he's just watching him, just trying to add the patience to my game. Glove, you know, he's explosive as well as me. And I love Glove's pass blocking, which is unique because, you know, we're both smaller running backs. So just watching him and his fundamentals is just going to better help me.
Can you expand on it? What are fundamentals for a running back? What are some of the things you see from him and you're like, okay, I need to do that?
Okay, just basically, you know, when we're coming up, our coach emphasizes on, you know, inch technique for, like, for blocking, and just seeing the way he just inches up to the line and shoots his hands is very – like, unique, which is just going to help me out, just be better.
What's the challenge in practice? Like, most of the guys you're going against, is it going to be edge guys, or is it going to be guys coming through gaps, linebackers?
You know, it varies upon, you know, the defensive scheme, but mainly we'll be on, you know, the backers. You have any alley defenders, safeties, corners, not really DNs, but, you know, if we have to pick them up, then we just have to pick them up.
Is there a safety or a linebacker who's been a handful for you?
Well, we have a lot of... I like, you know, 30 Tamiche out of Texas A&M. He's a very athletic end. We also have Spellman. I love his intensity. I just love his enthusiasm for the game. Then we have Jake Pope. He's a nice, you know, fitting safety. He comes down hard on run fits. And also, we have quite a few. We have Mumu, great. And we also have AB or Amarius Brown, another great back, secondary back.
So you're talking about guys of all sizes there. You're talking about dudes who are 190 to 205. And then Tumisha, as you said, is like 270 pounds. Yeah, what's that? What's it like blocking a guy that big?
Shoot, really, just when you see him out the edge, we just got to come and tackle him. Head first, you can't think. You just got to go.
Okay, I wanted to get into coaching. We're talking to Jet Thomas. Mm-hmm. Tell me how Ganther is different than Ford. I know Ford was like a real stickler. Ganther's tough, though. I watch him out there, and he's always, you know, he's on you guys. And he had good things to say about you last week when we talked to him, but he wasn't like effusive in praise. He's like, everyone's got work to do. So what's the difference in coaching?
You know, I love Coach Q. You know, just him, just besides football, you know, he's a great person outside of football, just being a coach. And, you know, just from the short time I've been with him, he's helped me just transform my game to, I believe, a higher level, helping me better keen in on my reads, knowing what I'm looking for. One thing he tells us is anticipate, but don't guess. So, you know, we want to anticipate something. When it happens, it happens. And if it don't, just don't guess for it. Just him as a general, the difference is really just, I like his enthusiasm. Like, if he hit runs, he's you turn around, he's right there behind you, which is very, you know, interesting from a coach. And just him just always being honest about being the best us we can, you know, not showing no favoritism, not showing nothing. Just he wants everybody to be great, which is great, which is awesome. You know, it's a running back room, so you don't want one person to have too much load. It's all spread out equally, which is fair between all of us because we all deserve it. And it's great just being around him.
Jet Thomas is with us. Head coach-wise, every head coach has a different style. Odom was pretty serious. He's pretty buttoned up. Our dealings with Mullen, he's real loose.
Yeah.
So am I off on Mullen? Is he, like, closer to Odom than we think, or is there a different style?
It's definitely a different style because, you know, there are different backgrounds or different ways to coach people. But Mullen, no, there's similarities because when it's time to go, he's on it. Like, don't play around. He's on it. And when it's time to chill, he's going to be chill with you. But as long as you know the focus and what we got to do, everything will be all right.
Jet Thomas is with us. So the quarterback look this year in the run game, I think, is going to be different. Year one, Maiva was, you know, okay on the RPOs. Obviously, Haj Malik brought, you know, some real good moves, and he was a good runner. You got two guys, and they're different sizes. Every time I see Calandra take off, and then, you know, guys can't whack him in practice, but he's got speed. And then Orgy, like, he's got speed, but also last week when I was watching the red zone offense, I'm like, my God, this guy in the red zone and his power. So what's that going to bring to the offense? Those guys have different styles, but they're going to be a dangerous element. Teams are going to have to defend them.
Both are, just really, we have two very great versatile quarterbacks. You can't anticipate on what any of them are going to do because they just bring another level to our offense. With Calandra, you know, he's a sneaky explosive. He has juice to him. He's a playmaker as well. And you have Orgy, another, he has juice, the strength. He's also fast. What people might not know about him, he has some quick feet. He's also a great playmaker. He can bomb it down the field if you want to make a quick little read, pull. Like, he can do all that. They both great quarterbacks, so it's just going to depend really on who make the lesser mistakes.
Jet Thomas is with us. I think there's like seven guys now from Georgia.
Yeah,
do you guys have a bond? Or
you know, just from just them coming in, I really didn't know it was that many people from Georgia until, you know, we had that little team camaraderie, but this is fun. It's just exciting knowing that there's other people from where I'm from just coming up here. We have another kid, walk-on 19, nice receiver. I call him White Chocolate.
Odin?
Yeah. I call him, yeah. He's great. I like his hands. I like him. Just, he's one of them. Just give him time just to grow. He's going to be, I believe he's going to be a special little sneaky talent for us too.
Well, you grew up in SEC country. We're talking to Jet Thomas, but your experience was different, right? You didn't have a ton of offers. A lot of these guys went to some of the biggest schools. What does it say about Mullen and the staff that he's convinced dudes who are at LSU and Auburn and in Pope's case, Alabama and Georgia to give a try to Vegas and give a try to UNLV?
It says a lot about just him recruiting wise. That shows how great of a quarterback. This shows how great of a coach he is, you know, just from his experience, the players that he led, the players that he coached. So I guess everyone just trusting in him is what brought everybody over here.
Goals for the season. You guys had great seasons last couple years. You won a lot of close games. And that's, I've been telling people, like, man, that last staff and that team, they won a lot of close games.
A lot of close games.
You got to win the close games, and then you want to get by the best teams. Mm-hmm. So just as an overall feel of the team, what makes you guys a better team to close out against the best teams like a Boise?
Those games really just going to be on us mentally. Just the mental focus of it. Everything else is going to be the same. It's just whether if we want it or not.
There he is, Jet Thomas, third-year running back for the Rebels. Expected to have a big year, but he's got good running mates. I think they're going to split the load. And Keevon Lee in from Mississippi State and Penn State, and also Jalen Glover, who transferred in from Utah. As a former defensive lineman, edge, Griffin, what was your approach when you were coming in and a 5'10", 190 running back was trying to stop you?
Oh, head first down, I'm putting my head right in your chest. If you, unless you are an offensive lineman, you are not allowed to block me as a D lineman.
There's not, you're not doing an athletic move, it's power move?
I mean, it depends on the size of the running back. I'm not going to lie to you, Steve. There was a time I hopped over one of those little boys trying to get at me. It's just a matter of what's your skill set and what's your best move to get past any kind of blocker, regardless of size.
I get a kick out of talking to the running backs about blocking because I don't think people factor this in enough. If you are not a good blocker, and especially as a young guy, there are almost no coaches who are going to look at you and go, well, he's a difference maker. He can score touchdowns. He can be a big ground gainer. If you can't block as a running back, you ain't getting on the field. And you see it a lot of times, like, if you can't block, certainly you're not going to be a three-down back. But if you're not good at blocking, you don't take it seriously, I don't think you have a chance to move up the depth chart. I mean, it's a serious deal here. And you know, clearly, if you can't protect the quarterback and you put him in jeopardy, whatever you can do on the ground don't mean a hill of beans.
It's the little things, Steve. Every position has the little thing that isn't necessarily what they think is their main priority in that position. Running back, anybody who wants to be a running back thinks it's all about, oh, I just need to be fast. I need to be able to put my head down and shoulders down. No, sir. You better be able to block. You better be able to contribute to the offense in more ways than just running the rock.
Let's give away a four-pack of tickets. The home opener, Idaho State, is in town. UNLV at Allegiant Stadium. UNLVtickets.com. You can grab your tickets. UNLVtickets.com. 1 p.m. kickoff. 4 o'clock. Check that. Four pack of tickets. It's for the game this Saturday. Caller 7-364-1100.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company go until 6, handing it off for a 7 o'clock start to the Dan Mullen Radio Show. Right here weekly on ESPN Las Vegas. That'll be at Parkway Tavern. You want to get out there live, 215 and Flamingo. Griffin, lesson to be learned, and I'm not lecturing you. I'm almost lecturing myself. But if you'll notice, I really didn't go into the story too deeply in hour number one. Griffin is always sending me stories, which I appreciate, because when I'm on the air, I can't keep up with a lot of the stories that are going on. So, you sent over... Man, the ESPN put this out. I don't know, man. I got to hear the audio on this, but about 2 hours ago, you sent over a story. I don't know when it was posted. It was posted 6 hours ago. You sent over a story with pictures of Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders. And it's Shedeur Sanders talking about that stupid, hey, you guys are entertainers, or... There's a difference between entertainers and competitors. And it was clipped real short without the question when it was first put out. Adam Schefter was totally on board with putting out that short clip, which, listen, if you're just engagement farming and you're just looking for hits and engagement, I guess is the way to do it. The approach with integrity is to actually put the question on the beginning of it, because out of context, it made it look, Griffin, and you saw it all over the place because it went on for like a day and a half, 2 days. It made it look like Dillon Gabriel was saying, I'm a competitor. Shedeur Sanders is an entertainer. There's a difference between us. And that's not what he was saying. He was saying the media people asking him about the battle between the two of them, that you guys are entertainers. Basically, like, I understand you guys have a job to do, but I'm a competitor. And that's a different job in front of me. So Sanders followed up on it today. He was asked some questions for his reaction, because Gabriel had to come out the next day and talk about it. And the blurb that you sent me is a grid with Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders on there. And it initially says, Dillon told me on the plane, which he's referencing, hey, it wasn't about you, Shedeur. It was about the media. So he said, Dylan told me on the plane, nah, that wasn't at you. He says, did I believe him? I don't know. That's put in red. And then dot, dot, dot. That's not going to change my life in any way. And if you remember what I said around 3:15 when I read this, I was like, I don't think this is completely accurate. When you put out something real short for social media, and this was Daniel Fusi of NFL Network who put this out, and then ESPN sent it out with the graphic, that's not exactly the way the conversation went, Griffin. And yet right now it looks like Shedeur Sanders said, I don't believe Dylan Gabriel told me it wasn't about me. I don't believe him. Or I don't know. Which when you say, hey, do you believe him? I don't know. What does that mean?
You would think there'd be a little bit more integrity and more, you know, focus on making sure if we're going to put stuff out there, let's make sure we're accurate.
Well, you need the whole quote.
Exactly.
You need the whole. You need all of the quotes. The problem is on social media when you want to do a little graphic, guess what? You can't put 11 lines of text in a quote. Here's, I'm going to read you the quote. I'm getting it from the Akron Beacon Journal. Again, when someone says, do you believe what Dylan Gabriel told you, like his explanation for entertainer versus competitor, when you put out a quote that says, did I believe him? I don't know. That suggests that Shedeur Sanders has some doubt in Dylan Gabriel and his integrity, his believability. That is a firestorm. You've already got drama between these guys. Here's how the quote went. This is, again, and I want to watch the audio. And this is why it's dangerous. It's also why I try to be really careful when I come on the air, because people go willy-nilly and react to stuff. And we see on social media, I mean, the great example is Kelsey Plum. I'll explain that in a second. Kelsey Plum has been dragged for something she did not say the way people said she said it. But Shedeur Sanders, according to Chris Easterling of the Akron Beacon Journal, says, I spoke with him, so I spoke with Dylan Gabriel. He said, nah, bro, that wasn't, he said that. He told me on the plane, he came up, he was like, nah, bro, I obviously don't speak like this, but that wasn't at you. I see how they trying to spin it. I'm like, oh, I'm not tripping. Regardless of whatever it was, nobody's words or anything affects me. The way this reads is totally different. Sanders was then also asked if he believes Gabriel and reiterated that the words had no impact on him, saying, did I believe him? I mean, I feel like you're trying to start stuff now. Where is that part of it?
Wow.
Shedeur Sanders sees what's going on here. He says again, I feel like you're trying to start stuff. I mean, the reporter's doing his job. He's supposed to. Man, he said, and that's not on me to sit here and be like, oh, he did it or he did it. That's not going to change my life in any way. I mean, you see what happens? You've scrunched together a quote. You've eliminated the middle part of it, which is kind of the meat, which explains it. And now this is going to go viral, and people will never put out that full quote, and it's going to look like now we've got a legit battle here. Dylan Gabriel was not, he says he wasn't taking shots at Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders basically says, hey, I don't believe him. That's bad.
That's real bad. But and that really is, it's a crappy situation, especially for a guy like Shedeur, who is trying to make this roster, trying to make his dreams come true in the NFL. And, you know, it seems like the media is just, like you said, farming for these comments.
Hold on. Don't do that.
Sorry.
You're
media.
Part of the media.
You're right.
Someone in the media
members
tried
of the
to
media.
Do that. Yeah.
Yes.
A member of the media tried to do that. A writer from the NFL Network, and then ESPN picks it up willy-nilly, but it's not the entire media. I want to get into the fight game. Also talk some Notre Dame football, and we'll bring in Ryan McKinnell next here on a Thursday edition, live at Circa Las Vegas, Cofield and Company.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Thursday, live at Circa Las Vegas. Let's bring in our buddy Ryan McKinnell, talk some fight sports stuff, also some football, as
Ryan follows all of it, especially Midwest. And, you know, you're a Notre Dame guy, and I know Notre Dame holds themselves at a very lofty status. So does Michigan. But I kind of wonder now if Michigan fans will shut the blank up after this latest penalty. It doesn't really hurt them, but it is a stain on the reputation. The NCAA didn't get Harbaugh really on anything except a 14-year show cause. He's not going to coach again. But, you know, what Michigan did was wrong. I mean, it was wrong.
Yeah, listen, I mean, that's, I mean, I feel like I've been watching that my whole life with college football, and I don't absolve Notre Dame of that, right? They've had scandals. Notre Dame, I mean, listen, I go back to the Lou Holtz years. There were always rumblings around town, you know, in terms of like what starters could get away with, and there were allegations of really bad behavior, and right, and these universities and these cities and these towns, more specifically, right, cover stuff up. But when you look at the Harbaugh situation, right, like Michigan is a powerhouse. They're a blue blood. They're a billion-dollar entity that sits at the top of the college football food chain year after year after year. And what does that mean? Well, it means a lot of money for the NCAA, right? And they just, whether it be Pete Carroll, whether it be Nick Saban looking the other way on possible recruiting, shout out to Shane Gillis and that great viral moment from last year, right? These teams, these programs, I don't feel like they ever suffer the brunt or the real consequence of some of their actions. And again, you can look at the pros. Honestly, you can look at anywhere. You can look at the Patriots. You can look at the Astros, right? If you're not cheating, you're not trying. It's the oldest adage in sports. And I almost think it goes double for the NCAA because I've always felt the NCAA was dirty. We're living in the NIL era, which is nice that, you know, the Texas offensive line are all driving Lamborghinis and everyone's getting paid. And I mean, there's downfalls to this too. Don't get me wrong, right? But I just, the billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars that these programs have been making off of the back of these kids and these, frankly, professionals, because the money that they make and they generate, their brands are professional brands. I felt it led to so much dirtiness and so much cheating and so many cover-ups, whether it be from Penn State. Again, I've listed the list and the different types of cover-ups, right? From recruiting to sexual assaults to cheating, just straight up cheating, right? Like there's never the consequences that I feel like they fully deserve. And that can go across the political landscape, right? Yeah. It can go into our real lives, money. Money is always the side, sort of the factor that brings everything together, if you will.
That said, I think if you told both of us, because we're not on a pedestal here, that if our schools, our favorite school, could win a national championship, all right, the coach can't coach again, and there's a donor who can just write a check for the $30 million, like Larry Ellison at Michigan. You would take it. All the stuff about, like, oh, their reputation is stained forever. No one's going to remember in five
No one
years.
Remembers. No one remembers Pete Carroll with USC and take him for the, you know, no one remembers. And nobody cares. And you're absolutely right. I was just talking about this with a buddy last night. Like, I'm 41. I was talking about how stupid sports are and how much I hate them. Like, he was a Cubs fan. and he was talking about how he hasn't been tuning in lately because how do you lose 2 out of 10 or whatever it was with the Cubs while the Brewers are going. Now, I know they won the back-to-back yesterday, but while they're winning like 14 games in a row, he was just livid. And the Brewers have an Andrew Vaughn, a former White Sox that came on and really, you know, helped the Brewers push into that position, right? I was talking to him. And I was just like, yeah, man, I just, you know, it drives me crazy. Like, it 41 years old, I might not see a Notre Dame or Chicago Bears Super Bowl or a Notre Dame national title. And that's all I've wanted for my whole life. And it's driven me insane. Like, I have to stop caring, right? But, yeah, I said I don't care. And I was running through my whole rant. I was like, but obviously that all changes if we win. Like, if the Bears win the Super Bowl this year, like, if Notre Dame wins the national championship, I am partying for many, many days. And I am a sports fan once again, and everything is fine. And I'm wearing a White Sox hat right now. I'm a mark.
Ryan McKinnell's with us up at Ryan McKinnell on Twitter. All right, UFC 319. We've had
don't
a lot
send
of good
them
conversations.
There. No, don't send them to my Twitter. No, I'm just kidding.
We've had a lot of good conversations about Chimaev and that main event against DDP. I personally enjoyed it. Over the course of the history of UFC, when a striker can't defend a takedown and just gets human blanketed, I'm all with it. But that said, I do listen to fans who are like, this is bullcrap. I don't like this style. Where do you fall on this whole thing? Because there was some finger wagging from Demetrius Johnson, like, don't watch then. That's not really a formula that you want to have with a sport. Don't watch if you don't like it. Okay, I won't.
Right. Well, that's what Dana White said for years, right? If you don't like it, don't watch. If these are too many cards, if the product isn't worth it, find something else, you know? But listen, I don't listen to the fans, right? Fans are stupid. Stupid, stupid people. They just, they don't know what they want a lot of the time, right? I will use an example. I go back to the era of George St. Pierre. Very similar in some ways to a Hamzat Chimaev, or what could end up being Chimaev's run, right? Extremely dominant, but also to a certain sector of fans, extremely boring, right? George, after he lost to Matt Serra in that shocking upset early in his career that Serra took the title from him, George was going to sports psychologists. I remember because this is right when I started covering the events and I got to speak to George live. My first actually numbered pay-per-view was UFC 74, George's return. He was fought Josh Koscheck, but it was first fight back after losing to Matt Serra. So I remember talking to him extensively about that loss and what it did to him, and it mentally broke him. It turned him into a guy who was never going to lose again. And in order to never lose again, he had to take the fight and control it at all stops and risk versus reward, right? Risk as little as possible to never feel that feeling of a loss again. And during that whole time, Steve, I listened to people bitch and moan and pull their hair out. And it was still social media. It was early social media, but people were still on there and people hated George St. Pierre. They wanted anybody else to be champion. Thought he was the most boring thing that could have ever possibly happened. And listen, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But at the time, I had no issue with it. And I love seeing people cry because I knew that when the time would be over and time would pass and we would get on the other side of it, people would just be proud and honored to have seen him and talk about how great he is and was. And that's exactly what happened, right? George St. Pierre is an all-time great, and people can debate his legacy with a wall, right? I feel the similar way about Hamzat Chimaev, at least inside the cage. And I think there's some other things we can talk about with Chimaev that are questionable and things that you could not like. But in terms of his in-cage product, and I know I picked DDP last week, and listen, I did that solely for the reasons I did. Well, listen, he's completely – he was winning fights that I never thought he should have won. So I didn't think he should have won against Chimaev, but like – for this fight, I'm going to pick against him. Now, that said, I don't think he'll ever be a champion again because I think Chimaev, he's on the trajectory. He's what we all thought. He is champion. He's not just championship material. He's potential GOAT material. I can't see how anyone beats him. He is endless energy. He has a dominant wrestling game, which I think when you have that in any era, it is really hard to overcome. And what I saw on Saturday night was just pure, pure, absolute dominance. And for the people who don't like it, get used to it. You know, you sit here and talk glowingly about, I mentioned George St. Pierre, but even, you know, Khabib Nurmagomedov, there's people that actually think that guy was one of the greatest of all time. He wasn't. It's nice that he retired undefeated, but Chimaev has a chance to do something like that. Just run roughshod over potentially, Steve, multiple divisions too, depending on how he wants to treat this and what he wants to do with his weight. But he's a terrifying individual. Inside the cage, I'm going to be honest with you, outside the cage, the Chechen Wolf, he's got some dangerous friends.
Yep, outside the cage, which makes it really interesting. First of all, before we get to his ties in terms of his home country, I thought it was really interesting in the cage. One, I really couldn't understand much of what he was saying, and I don't want to go down this whole xenophobic, learn the language, it's going to help the promotion, whatever. But he actually did look back at Dana White, and he's like, hey, give me my money. I don't care about that S belt. And I don't know that Dana White could hear him, but he had a weird look on his face. What do you think he meant when he was just talking about the money? I actually kind of like it because I've been branding all these former Soviet bloc fighters as guys who are, you know, going to fight for pennies. That indicated to me that money is important to him and he doesn't care about the belt.
Well, smart. That was the number one thing. The number one legacy that Conor McGregor, I feel like, left on this sport was showed and laid the blueprint for future fighters that these UFC belts, and this used to be my lead in on Sirius XM. You used to hear Ryan McKinnell, the bumpers would hit. And one of my rants early on, I was like, UFC belts mean Jack blank, right? Jack F. And I stand by that with the constant creation of interim titles and stripping people or, you know, keeping John Jones in the rankings 3 years after he's never had a fight. But these other people are ahead. Right. It was always a promotional tool. They don't mean anything. Right. It helps when now we're not in this era anymore as we enter the new Paramount deal. Right. But in the pay-per-view era, pay-per-view points, having a title actually meant something in terms of what you were able to collect on the back end in terms of pay-per-view buys. So it was all strong arm negotiations. But Conor McGregor came along and showed everybody, like when he beat Jose Aldo in 13 seconds, he never defended did he do? He went right up in weight and fought Eddie Alvarez, right? When then the Nate Diaz fights, they were at 170 for nothing. They were at 170 pounds for nothing. When he lost at 170 pounds the first time against Nate Diaz, he's like, screw it. I want to do the rematch and I want to do it at 170. Like, what? Just delusional type behavior for a guy who was a champion at 145 pounds. But he just showed every other fighter that was going to come that these belts mean absolutely nothing. It's all about the matchups. It's all about the paychecks. And it's all about what fights can I make that are most interesting. So Chimaev is, that is exactly what you want to hear. You know what I mean? First of all, I love it because I anytime someone goes at Dana White when they have power, I just think it's amazing, right? There's a lot I can say about Khamzat that I do not like, and I do not like him as a person. I just don't, right? But I'm going to put that aside and talk strictly about the fighting and the way he's handling his brand with Dana White. It's exactly how you do it. Put it back on Dana. That's the loudmouth bully, right? That's Trump's best friend. That's the guy who goes out and with these boisterous, loud, ridiculous, you know, promos about, you know, fighter pay and this and that. Well, Khamzat's got the power. Khamzat right now, most likely, most interesting fighter on your entire roster for myriad of reasons, right? I mean, he's young, he's fresh. We don't know what the ceiling is for him. We don't know how long he's going to reign. We thought he was going to be a champion from the moment that he showed up in the octagon. And again, he's dangerous. Like when he winked at DDP before that fight on Saturday and kind of grinned at him, I was like, okay, dude, he's a psychopath. He thinks he's going to win. We think he's going to win. DDP probably thinks he's going to win. And I would imagine at least for the foreseeable future, everyone that steps in the cage with him is going to get sort of those Fedor, Anderson Silva type vibes of like they're looking across the cage at a monster. And honestly, I think they are. And this is a new era for that middleweight division and maybe a new era for the UFC because, listen, we've seen champions go at Dana White before. It doesn't. He'll placate him a little bit and he'll try. Like, I think Connor was a good one because Connor had so much power. He would toy with Dana in public and Dana would kind of have to eat it. I think we're in a similar situation with Khamzat. Dana has very little power here.
Ryan McKinnell talking some fight sports here. So we're live on a Thursday at Circa Las Vegas. Now you're in the center of the college football universe.
Yeah.
Right down the road there from Notre Dame.
And 2 miles from the stadium as we speak.
Right by the linebacker lounge, right?
Yep.
Starting quarterbacks are being named. Notre Dame had a race for starting quarterback. I don't know if this kid's going to hold on to it for the whole year, but he's got to play well. They got to get good quarterback play if they want to do what they did last year. Their win total is 10.5. They just announced C.J. Carr, which funny because he's a grandson of Lloyd Carr, Michigan legend.
Right.
Beat out a sophomore. What are the hopes with the kind of the quarterback question here, and especially the beginning of the season, Ryan? Mm-hmm. I mean, right out of the freaking gates – at Miami, home Texas A&M.
Yeah, that's the hardest part of their schedule, right, are their first two games. And then it kind of becomes a sort of non-Notre Dame schedule. I mean, I'm growing up in the 90s and the early aughts, obviously, you know, the landscape's changed a bit for Notre Dame, but still I've dealt with a lot of gnarly seasons that the Irish have had to deal with, right? I remember going to middle school and high school with the coach that replaced Lou Holtz, Bob Davey. I think a lot of people will remember Bob Davey. I went to school with his daughter, Audra, and I remember how vicious it was during those Davey years for her specifically. Like, she got bullied at school. Like, there were fire Davey chants, and people hated him, and it was this exceptionalism in Notre Dame, and it was really high drama. It was like there was tension in the town, right? And that can play into Charlie Weiss. That can play into Brian Kelly. There's always been this feeling of, like, we're trying to recapture the magic and find trust in the program when there's just in some ways ego. I thought there was a lot of ego with Bob Davey. Like he was a good coach that just Notre Dame was too much of a high horse. Right. And I think when you talk about ego in Notre Dame, a lot of people across the country and in Vegas right now would be nodding their head. Yeah. It's a huge turnoff and why people probably hate Notre Dame. Right. Well, I'll tell you, as a South Bend local, growing up here, obviously I've been in Vegas for 18 years, but that party you never leaves. That ego is dissipated, I think, in terms of the fan base, at least locally, right? Because there's just been so much heartbreak, whether it be Alabama and the other national championship loss or big-time losses against top-ranked teams, right? But I'll say this, right? I wouldn't factor in last year's national championship to that and the loss to Ohio State. Something has changed in the last couple of years here in this town, and I think it's Marcus Freeman.
Yeah.
There is a completely different feel about this team, almost a carte blanche belief that in whatever this man does, It's for the betterment of the team, and he has the team, especially in an NIL era. And I know there's been transfers. Angeli's on the East Coast. Like, I know this. It just something feels different. And it feels different that people are starting to respect and recognize Notre Dame again. They're almost becoming like a cool brand. I referenced, you know, Shane Gillis earlier. I honestly think in some ways he's had something to do with that, right? I think people are sort of intrigued by what could be. And I think that obviously that playoff run last year kind of proved that Notre Dame is a force to be reckoned with. I still think, you know, everyone will have their doubts, and, you know, CJ Carr is a sophomore and he's got a lot to prove, but he's got the best running back in NCAA behind him with Jeremiah Love, with a lot of excitement and a really good team behind him. And I'll tell you, man, hopes are high here in South Bend. And yeah, I mean, that first part of the season is going to tell a lot. But I'll tell you this, I was at the NIU game. The only game I went to last year was the home opener against Northern Illinois, and they lost that game, and it was stunning, right? But the team rallied. They obviously, you know, would go on to win every single game until that national championship, and really helped put their brand back on the map and establish Marcus Freeman as one of the best coaches in college football. And I think 574 of the area code, I think South Bend finally recognizes it. And I have, man, I can't remember this push positivity around a single coach. Maybe since Lou, right? Like, I mean, the people love Marcus Freeman, and rightfully so. If he wins, this town in this era against these type of teams that Notre Dame is recruiting against and trying to, you know, build talent against, if they win, this man will have a statue built, and he will have equity here that we haven't seen since Lou.
Ryan McKinnell on Cofield & Company. I'm glad you mentioned the NIU game. It looks like the easiest home game on the schedule this year will be Purdue. They'll be improved. Former UNLV coach Barry Odom is there, but you're not going to the Purdue game. Don't go to the Purdue game.
Don't jinx it. Listen, man, I don't believe in that stuff. I'm going to tell you this. I don't know how long I'm going to be back for the fall, because I am coming back to Vegas for a while and figure out what's going on, you know, with my house and everything. I'm kind of, you know, I'm very bohemian summer. I'm going to see Nine Inch Nails tonight. I found $20 tickets at the United Center. I'm grabbing my buddy. I'm leaving here in about an hour. I'm very excited. I've been doing a lot of that, right? So if a game's cheap enough, I'm going to go. And honestly, the Purdue game is probably going to be cheap enough. And what's that? That's early September. That's September 20th. The leaves aren't changing quite yet, but the weather's cooled down. Tailgate's going to be it's going to be perfect. Like, that's the type of game I go to. And Purdue's always a great rivalry, because you get the engineer kids coming up from Lafayette, you know, and they're always, you know, they got something to say. It's always a good vibe. I'm going to be honest with you, Steve. I'm probably going to be at the Purdue game. That's probably going to be a game I want to go to.
Adam Sandler is a rabid fan base. People will buy what he sells. They like his movies. Happy Gilmore 2 was just okay. And then I saw the note that they spent over $150 million to make that movie.
Has to be the cameos. You're
right.
It has to be the cameos, right? You had to pay Marshall Mathers. You had to pay John Daly. You had to pay half the PGA Tour.
Dude, I was looking at Lee Trevino, and I'm like, good for him. You know, they probably threw him 10 grand. Maybe they might have thrown him 500,000.
I mean, in $150 million club, I mean, maybe $30 million went to Sandler. Like, it's my theory that, like, Netflix was like, hey, you know, Adam, we really want this Happy Gilmore 2. He's like, okay, well, I don't necessarily need to do it. How much money do you want to throw me and my friends? Right? Like, Rob Schneider is never going to work in Hollywood again if it's not an Adam Sandler movie. So, hey, Rob's, you know, he's down on his luck. You know, his support and his insanity on social media, this guy really needs, and I say that tongue in cheek because I'm kind of an insane person on social media. This guy needs a bone, right? I need an Adam Sandler in my life. Steve, you need to make more money so you can put me on to get 150 million.
I need you to be Sandler.
Yeah.
Not me. You're the Sandler. Damn you.
You're the stronger brand. You're the older name here. I need you to be Sandler. But no, that's there's a lot of people. There's a lot of friend groups right now, right? Saying, why aren't you the Adam Sandler? Look at what he did for Rob Schneider. Why can't you take care of me? But yeah, that's one thing I love about Sandler, is that he really does take care of his friends. And I'd like to believe that the $150 million, on some level, right, paid for all those insane cameos. And I got to be honest, man, I really liked Happy Gilmore too. I really did. And I don't normally like sequels. I stopped short of calling it the Maverick of comedies, right?
Well, stop. Come on.
I know. I honestly thought it was perfect. I didn't think you could do it any better. Like, first of all, the first Happy Gilmore wasn't There Will Be Blood. It wasn't Citizen Kane. It wasn't some cinematic masterpiece. It was a stupid, dumb movie about had alligators biting off Carl Weathers' hands, and then he kills Carl Weathers by pushing him out of wind, right? Dumb, stupid, stupid movie, but it was great. It was my first DVD I ever owned. I played it on my compact home computer. I never had a TV in my room growing up, right? But when I got my PC, it had a DVD player in it circa 1996, 97. So I never had a TV in my room growing up, so I couldn't watch stuff before bed. But once I got that computer, I could watch DVDs. And the only DVD I had was Happy Gilmore. I could recite the first 30 minutes of that movie for years, word for word, right? So I love Happy Gilmore.
Devotee.
Yeah, I thought 2 was just absolutely perfect. It was stupid. It was ridiculous. It was over the top. But it had all that, like, psychedelic, oddball Sandler humor where they, like, cut away and just show you something random. And you're like, wait, what? Is that John Daly drinking out of a cuckoo clock? Like, what is going on? It was just dumb. And I just – it had a little bit of heart. It was ridiculous. I really enjoyed it. So I think, you know, people like to critique and everyone's got something to say when something like a cultural sort of event – release like that happens, whether it be music or movies, and a lot of the time they'll kind of dump on it, but I think time will shine kindly on Happy Gilmore 2.
I got 2 minutes left, so speaking of stupid and ridiculous, I love boxing, and I really don't get on novelty fights anymore and rip them, but there's some weird ones coming out here. Jake Paul at probably 215 pounds is going to fight in an exhibition lightweight Tank Davis, who probably walks around at like over 160, but still there's going to be like a 50-pound weight difference in an exhibition. Like, who wants this?
Yeah, it's bad for boxing. It's bad for boxing. I haven't said that about Jake Paul. I very much was respect the word I'm looking for, admire. I don't know if those are two words I want to use in regards to Jake Paul, but I tip my cap to him because he's been able to generate a lot of interest and make a lot of money for himself off of fleecing a really sort of fan base.
Yeah.
And in some ways, he's also, you know, done other legitimately great things that I do have to admire, specifically putting over women like Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano, and other fighters as well. Like he's done that. And he's also went after Dana White and talked about fighter pay, whether it be self-serving or not, it's kind of immaterial. This leaves a bad taste in my mouth because it's just a supreme mismatch in weight, which is just dumb. It's not even a pro fight. It's an exhibition fight, which I get why that kind of has to happen, but it keeps Tank on the shelf, right? Like it keeps him from fighting, and he's got some momentum right now. And now he's not a particularly good person, Gervonta Davis, but he is a really good fighter with really interesting potential fights to make. And that gets put on hold for Jake Paul to fight a name that he outweighs by 60 pounds. And
maybe Ryan, this is a work that lasts a week, and Jake Paul is actually helping Tank, and the money will come to the table to make Tank Stevenson, or at the lowest level, a building fight with Tank against, I know you're going to hate this, Pac-Man.
No, I don't hate it. That makes more sense.
Maybe he's helping him out. Maybe he's putting him in a position for negotiating.
Here's the dumb thing about that conversation. Tank versus Pacquiao makes more sense than Tank versus Paul, right? Which then makes Paul versus Anthony Joshua, a fight they still want to make more sense than that. You know what I mean? Like,
please.
This is dangerous era. Dangerous, stupid era where, like, people already don't care about combat sports. Like, the UFC's brand, I think, is tanking. Boxing is... Man, I mean, we'll see what happens with Canelo and Terrence Crawford. That's the biggest fight boxing can make. And I think they priced themselves out. I know tickets are still available. It's nice that we get to watch it for free at home on Netflix. Well, free relatively, right? But that's a fight that people should be able to go to. And I don't know anyone that's going to that fight outside of media because the tickets are so expensive. And that's really a bummer. And this should be a really great summer/fall for boxing. And it's feeling like it's turning into anything. But
all right, Ryan, enjoy your concert and buy your tickets for Notre Dame. Stay away from the Purdue game. I'm telling you, you're James. We appreciate
now. I gotta go just to follow
up my face when they beat him by four touchdowns.
Or come on this very show a few days later and be like, you were right. I'm an idiot. I should have stayed away.
Thanks, Ryan. We'll see you, buddy.
All right.
There he is, Ryan McKinnell. We're up against it. Coming up in less than an hour is the Dan Mullen Radio Show live over at Parkway Tavern on Flamingo and 215. Thanks to all the guests today. Great job by Griffin back in the Finley Toyota Studios. And, of course, thanks again to Circle Las Vegas for housing each and every Thursday show. We'll see you tomorrow. Cofield and Company. We're live at Treasure Island.